Nice. That was cool. Don't say phase one. That's not nice. There's no phase two, right? Oh, are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? His head fell off? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? I thought you were kidding. I can't believe it. What? Do I need that? I gotta get it.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Struggle Session. I'm Leslie III.
I'm Jack Allison.
And today, we're just catching up.
I haven't spoken to Leslie in a little while. I mean, you went to New York. This has probably been the longest period I haven't spoken to you, but since we've done this podcast, probably.
Yeah, we had a few in the tank. Hope you enjoyed those episodes. That episode we did with Mitch Bowman for Aquaman, mm-hmm. and the one we did with Michael Saba about Russiagate. We recorded those 2 weeks ago. So yeah. We just need a little time because I was going to New York primarily to hang out and be on stage with the Street Fight guys.
Yeah, how was that?
It was awesome. The show sold out, 300 people,
wow.
Just packing the place. It was so cool. Everyone there was really chill, really down, knew us. They all were, I met a lot of people who were in the Struggle Session, told me they really like Struggle Session. That was
very cool.
Very appreciated. Thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you all, but it was a fun show. We just got on stage and talked a bunch of shit about all the people running. And of course, Katie Halper, who joined me with Street Fight for the first half. And then the second half, it was the Chapo guys and Amber in the second half. It was a fun show. Everybody seemed to really enjoy it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just at it seemed a really interesting new kind of thing and type of show. I've never seen a live podcast show. We've been thinking about how you do live podcasts and mm-hmm. what they are and what they mean. And I was looking at the WTF Mark Maron's podcast, and he just sits at a table and does his podcast.
Yeah, I think it's not to shit talk or anything like that, but what is fun about going out to see that? What is fun about going to see that?
Well, the Street Fight guys, they took it at next level. We all stood the entire time.
Wow.
They were saying no chairs.
Yeah, I had to do that when I did their live show. I was a little bit I was a little bit taken aback by that even. I was like, I thought, also, by the way, for our show, somehow it ended up happening that Brian took his shoes and socks off, and so Brett did as well. And so then people also asked me to take my shoes and socks off. So I was standing, for the
socks,
whole time.
Jack. Were you wearing socks?
I was wearing socks. I was not.
Were you wearing?
Was wearing shoes on that day. I went out to be the guest on a Street Fight show. So of course I put on big boy shoes and big boy socks. But I will say that standing the whole time is one thing. Another thing is my feet got very cold. So that's my review of the Street Fight show that I did.
Yeah, but it was very fun. Great audience. Got to meet tons of people. And I got to make a special announcement, which I'll make here.
Yeah.
Is that in that same venue in Littlefield in mm-hmm. Brooklyn, Jack Allison, Leslie wow. III, and Katie Halper will be doing a live show together. Yes, it's Struggle mm-hmm. Session X the Katie Halper show.
Yeah.
Live in New York.
Just a little under a month from now.
Yeah, May 10th. May mm-hmm. 10th. Tickets should be up by the time you hear this episode. You'll get them at, Littlefield's,
I think. Littlefield's, right? I don't know. Littlefield's, Brooklyn. Yeah, Littlefield's, Brooklyn. It's littlefieldnyc.com, right?
It's Littlefield, no S, no S.
Littlefield. So
it's at Littlefield, just like
little
a small field.
Like if you saw a very small, tiny little field, that's what it would be.
But it's a very great venue. The people so far have been very kind and nice to us. It's a really neat place. They have food. They got got all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
They got alcohol. They got food.
All
they have a place for it to stand.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But we will be doing a live show there, and we already have announced our guests. We have Jamie Peck from the Majority Report, the Antifada. We'll have Jake Flores from Mr. Pod Damn America there, and Matt Taibbi, yes, Mr. Vampire Squid himself,
yes,
from Rolling Stone magazine. You know who it is. We're gonna have him.
You know who it is. Yeah. Now this is gonna be a great show. I'm really really excited for it. This is only gonna be our second show ever and our first show on the East Coast. So you know, and it might be the only one for a while. You know what I mean? Because Leslie, I'll tell you what, I'm not gonna keep doing these live shows unless you can get me like a hotel or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I can't be just fucking going out there and staying on the floor and shit. I'm just joking, everyone. I don't deserve any better on the floor.
That's a deep cut. But yeah, so please come out. We would love to see you. We got to sell some tickets. This is a nice venue. We got to sell a certain number of tickets, but I think we'll get there easily. We'll make sure we're already planning what we're going to talk about.
1,200 people or something like that? Like, what do we have to clear here?
Not quite, but okay. I think
we'll be fine. We'll be fine.
Yeah, we got a strong base out there on the East Coast from what I've seen this weekend.
Yeah.
Lots of good folks, lots of good
It's going to be $10, too. It's not very expensive.
Oh,
show.
Yeah. Only $10.
It's a lot cheaper than going to see a movie. It's like literally, like, just to come to the Struggle Session show instead of seeing a movie or, like, getting Chipotle or something.
Oh, man. But I had a good time in New York, aside from, like, I know I'm promoting a live show and I'm about to shit talk New York, but like New York's a great city, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the best cities in the world. New Yorkers, some of the best people in the world, but like, I just didn't understand the thing that I saw time and time again. It's like, I assume most New Yorkers like have phones, they have offices, they have places they can go. Why do New Yorkers always argue on the street?
Is there a lot of arguments going on in New York?
New Yorkers are always yelling at each other and arguing, like just in the middle of the place. Like there were actually some dancers who do, you know, the subway dancers that come on, do their announcements and stuff. And like before the train had stopped, like after they had already gotten their tips and everything, they were like having a big blow up argument with each other in front of the audience that they just had. Like that's just New York style, I guess.
That's New York. Then I'm going up to the East Coast for a wedding. That's why we're even able to do this show in the first place. Because I'm not buying. I can't like buy plane tickets and shit. You know what? Let's be clear here. Like we're not gonna make a lot of money on this show. But yeah, you know, I haven't been in a little while, so I'll keep an eye out. You know, the thing I used to be most excited about going to New York for is no longer a big deal anymore. Which is, I used to like to go to New York because they have Shake Shack. But now we have it here in L.A., so who gives a shit?
Shake Shack is garbage, Jack. What? It's garbage. It's garbage.
I don't think Shake Shack is garbage.
It's garbage. You took me to Shake Shack in L.A. I was very excited for it. Like, of the
garbage. That's a ridiculous thing to say.
No. Of the bougie, overpriced burger chains, like, it's so much worse than BurgerFi, like, in every way.
What's BurgerFi?
BurgerFi is, like, the same thing. It just tastes a little better. The burgers are a little bigger. It's just still expensive as shit, like,
I have no
fast
idea what a BurgerFi is anyway. So I can't even respond to this allegation.
Shake Shack is not even as good as, like, Five Guys. I think Five Guys is better.
I have to disagree there, but Five Guys is pretty good, but I think that they do, you know, the bun is a little bit better at Shake Shack, and I do think the quality of the beef is better. You know, it's not the biggest.
They have Shake in their name, and you have more Shake selection and variety at Five Guys.
Who needs variety?
Who needs variety?
What we need is curation, Leslie.
Jesus
we need curation for good. Good milkshakes.
Oh,
anyway, geez. I don't, you know, it used to be that was the thing. Like, now what am I excited for is, like, what, Papaya King or some shit? Actually, what I really do like about New York is that they sell hot dogs on the street. I like that just about any time. And I do it too much. I'm like, in New York, you know, the idea of just having, like, a sort of, like, snack hot dog is so much more attainable than it is out here in L.A.
If you want a hot dog, like, anywhere else in the country, it's like you're going to the grocery store.
Like, go to a restaurant.
You're going to a restaurant.
You're going to a hot dog restaurant or you're going to the grocery store and firing up the grill. In New York, I mean, like, you can get hot dogs the way you can get like gum and shit. You know what I mean? I'm just like if I'm like a little bit peckish, I'd be like, oh, I can like put down an entire hot dog, I guess is what I could do really quickly while I'm still walking. And nobody even like has to know. You know what I mean? Like I could be going to dinner and just sneak a little secret hot dog like right before I walk in the door. Nobody even needs to know about that.
Oh, man. Oh.
It's on the way. It's on the way. It's nice.
On the way. All right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the hot dogs.
You know what else New York has besides hot dog stands on every corner? Podcasters.
Yeah.
There are lots of podcasters everywhere, and I met all of them.
Did you feel right at home among all the – did they all have their Blue Yeti mics? Is that how you tell a podcaster?
Yeah, like you know how in like movies where you know somebody is a DJ because he has headphones around his neck like constantly?
Yeah, podcasters have a Blue Yeti with a USB cable around their neck, hanging from a USB cable. That's how you tell a podcaster. You know, you always have to keep it with you because you never know when you're going to just – have to podcast. You know what I mean? It can happen anytime.
You always got to have your working books with you. You know, always got to be ready to cast. Yeah,
yeah. And you might see something that inspires a take and have to cast right from that very spot.
But there was a picture going around after the live show because we went to a little party afterwards, which turned out to be a birthday party for our sweet boy from Cumtown, Adam.
How nice.
And I got to meet
him. He was very unfair to Chelsea Clinton, though.
Yeah, he's still living under secrecy from the fatwa that the Clinton family placed on him. But yeah,
Did you see any of the... any of the Clinton killers there? Did you see anybody that might have been a plainclothes Clinton killer? Well,
it's possible. It was at an undisclosed location, so we kept them safe. But I got
to
meet him.
What you have to do is you yell Vince Foster really loudly and see if anybody's eyes go wide.
But got to meet Adam. Got to meet everybody from the Antifada. Got to meet Dasha from Red Scare. Got to meet all these nice people, all these podcasters that all in the same place at the same time.
Did any podcaster beefs break out? I mean, did fists start getting thrown?
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately, it's nothing but Twitter fingers out there in the podcasting streets of Brooklyn. Thankfully, it's good. It's good. Keep your beefs online. They're funnier there for everyone to enjoy. But it was kind of funny to me because, you know, people online will be like, oh, all podcasters know each other. And Jamie Peck had a good tweet where she was like, yes, we all live in a Verso loft together. We all sleep in one big bed, like from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory together. And it's like, I guess in Brooklyn for certain people it is, but like, I don't live in Brooklyn. I live in Virginia. I don't know any of these people really. I'm like 10 years older than them. I'm married. So it's not really the same thing for me. Which is why I enjoyed the party so much, because I could just sit in the old man chair in the corner. Like, I never knew that when I was going to all those raves, how much fun, like, the older people who would come and just sit in the corner and smile were having.
I need to settle in. I need to start bringing a book to parties, is what I think. I need to just start openly bringing a book when I go to parties.
Jack, it's so good. It's so good. It's the best thing, because you don't have to worry about mean people. People will come up to you. You don't have the social anxiety.
Is there a way to make that so they don't come up to you? Even?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But you could if you had like sunglasses on.
I don't need to put up a sign.
But it was so much more fun, like being able to go to a party as like someone who's kind of past the age of everybody else.
Yeah.
There, no social anxiety, no worrying who you have to meet, who you have to impress. You just sit there and chill. It's cool. It's cool. Getting older, it's okay, folks.
Yeah, getting older is okay. Except I'll tell you what, Leslie, I like drank for like, I like drank at a wedding, and I drank when Connor Golden came and stayed with me, and I'm like, I can't like drink. I feel like I'm like now, it makes me like too tired. Like I got like, I was like bedridden for like 3 days because I like drank. I think it's only for your 20s is what I'm starting to feel like. I'm like, I think that maybe you, I don't know, talking about this with a friend yesterday, it's like you maybe just can't, at least for me, I'm not even like a bad drunk or have problems with drinking. I'm just like, I like can't do it physically. It's too hard. It's literally, I'm maybe not in good enough shape to drink beer.
Oh, what else is going on? Oh, New York. Well, the big reason that everyone's there, including Street Fight, was, of course, WrestleMania was happening. Not in New York, actually. It was happening in East Rutherford, New Jersey, which is way
they have
the
like,
fuck.
Looser labor laws there or something?
I guess probably, and less, the venue cost a lot less money to get. Yeah. But yeah, that's where they're having WrestleMania. Now they have, like, the cool thing is, like, they will have, like, all the indie wrestling shows, not just indie, but, like, pretty big shows too, including Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling from Japan, Stardom USA, which I got to go to, Shimmer. They all came in, to New York and had shows, and all those shows were, like, 10 times more fun than the actual WWE show. And I didn't really get watch it except for like one match with Brock Lesnar, where like Brock Lesnar is such a, you know who Brock Lesnar is, Jack?
I'm gonna look him up. I feel like I definitely do know the name.
Well, he's but he's
it'd be hard for me to pick out wrestlers from a lineup.
I think you would pick out Brock Lesnar because he's like 6'5" and he has a big like sword looking penis looking sword rather on his chest, and he's just
has he been in movies and shit? I'm sure he has.
No, he actually hasn't. He's one of the ones who like never like got did like even he never even did like the early Batista thing where they just needed a big guy for a movie and they would put him in. He never really did that for some reason.
I do like the big guy wrestlers just in movies when they're just like extremely large and nonverbal.
But Batista actually turned that into like actual career. But there are actually a ton of like Bob Sapp and like you see all he was in, I think, Elektra. Like there's tons of like just big guy wrestlers. Tyler Mane, the guy who played the first Sabretooth in X-Men, he was just like a big guy wrestler who did like a nonverbal role in the film. Like we need to have more films of that, or we need to do Expendables with just all those guys. Like just no talking, just a bunch of massive guys grunting at each other. But something took the shine off WrestleMania this weekend, and that's, you know, from our good friend, you know, we love his work on this show, of course. And that's John Oliver.
I was shocked, Leslie. I mean, people sent me, they were like, look at this clip like Leslie posted, like, don't worry that it's from like John Oliver or whatever. I was like, wow, Leslie is given like the John Oliver endorsement here. So what did he do? Did he say that Vince McMahon should be called Vince McMonth or something like that? Like, let's call him Vince McMuff.
He has to have like wrestling fans on the writing staff because he's not good enough to come up with a takedown that's actually this good. But
I watched the piece actually. It was very good.
Yeah, some people were complaining they left he left some stuff out. And towards the end, he does do that goofy thing where he says, all you have to do to fix the problem is like do a chant at the show.
Yeah, like yell. And Vince will be like, all righty, we'll give him health care.
Yeah, but before he Olivers it, he does a pretty good, you know, explanation of why WWE is just such a awful horrendous company, and why like Vince McMahon in particular is just like kind of a monster. We talked about it on the show before, but he plays clips from a podcast that CM Punk did with his then friend Colt Cabana, where he talked about like all the terrible things that happened with him and his health in WWE, and because a lot of fans were kind of shocked when he left the company, you know, in his prime, basically. And it was because, like, he felt that he was going to die if he didn't, because the doctors didn't care about him. They didn't properly treat his concussions. They didn't properly treat his infection. They would just keep giving him Z-packs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which caused him to defecate himself on live television.
Yeah.
And what Oliver didn't mention is that Sting and Punk was sued by the doctor for the WWE, with of course the WWE's help, for millions of dollars.
Oh my god.
For doing a podcast. They tried to, even after he left, they tried to destroy
his life. What about his poster's
rights? Yeah. Poster right, and the sad
human
part,
right. Poster's rights are human rights.
Poster's rights are human rights. And the sad part is, like, a lot of WWE fans, like, really weren't on his side because they were still wrapped up in the idea that CM Punk had left him. CM Punk quit. And because, you know, because
the fake, like, like TV show story narrative.
Yeah, kind of like the fake TV show story narrative mixed with this, you know, weird feeling of loyalty that wrestling fans have.
I feel
to
like
WWE.
I feel like you fandoms have this weird thing. Like Star, like there's the like sort of Marvel fandom that has this too, where they like are they want. Like I've seen this in like DC with people saying that like the Siegel and Schuster family are like shitty or something like that, and I'm like, you know, you don't have to like defend like the company that makes this stuff.
No, absolutely not. And so like a lot of people were kind of nasty toward him, but thankfully when John Oliver played this clip, I mostly saw like positive reactions from fans. Like, yeah, it's fucked up. And like fans have known about this for decades, about the lack of health care, the calling them independent contractors, even though they have to work for them like 250 days a year.
That's bullshit they did for me at Funny or Die too, but I also was not like giving myself concussions every day.
Yeah. And there's some really like hard stuff in it. Like the clip of Vince McMahon, I have forgotten about this. The clip on The Real Sports where he's being asked if he feels any responsibility for the wrestler deaths, and he's just like, and he starts like mocking, laughing, and then slaps the paper.
He does like a mocking voice and then slaps he's like a wrestling character. Does he realize he's like, you can break kayfabe?
Oh, I know, but I think that's letting him off the hook, because no, that was just him. That was just him.
That's him not breaking kayfabe. No. That is actually him. Like, he could have done kayfabe and said, like, yeah, we do have a lot of concern for them, you know?
Yeah. That was him showing his real opinion and his real feeling on the matter, because he's gotten away with it for so long and nobody nowhere ever can push him back. Like, he has not, he's surrounded by, like, yes men by necessity, because he is not only in total control of the company, he's in total control of the industry. Like, so few, and you saw what happened, the one guy who told him, fuck off, CM Punk, he sued him for millions of dollars. Like that's what happens. You can get blacklisted, you can get sued, you can, if you don't go along with Vince. And it was kind of refreshing to see even some independent wrestlers who, you know, probably want, who had at some point wanted to work for WWE, were sharing Oliver's video too, because for the most part it was so good. They like some people tried to push back on it, because at one point he says something bad about like Roman Reigns. He says his hair is always wetting. It's like pedophile hair.
I think that's like a joke.
Yeah, it was a joke, but they tried to.
Pretty sure that one's a joke.
Yes, because Roman Reigns. So the funny thing is, he posts a clip of the fans booing and cursing him out for 8 minutes, which happened, is what the fans did to him. But since then, he came out with that his leukemia came back, and so now fans are nice to him now. Like that's the only thing that's changed, and because Oliver didn't mention it, they try to like hold on to that to show, we've got you. This whole thing about how like all the wrestlers are being treated like shit and are unhealthy. No, actually, that guy has cancer too.
We're
so
nice to him now. Yeah, he has cancer and he's also not getting coverage for that.
Yes, too. Yeah.
checkmate.
Oh man, but yeah, WWE.
So what happened at WrestleMania though? Is it all, everything was good there or what?
Yeah, they didn't have any fans chanting. I didn't really watch anything about the show except for the Brock Lesnar match, which bummed me out so much I didn't watch the rest of it, because basically Brock Lesnar has been their champion for past several years now. Mm-hmm. He started like in the aughts and 2000s in wrestling for WWE. He came from a legitimate amateur wrestling background, was like a national champion. And he always kind of like hated wrestling, kind of like professional wrestling. Like he didn't really like enjoy doing it because he was a top tier athlete. Unfortunately, in a sport that doesn't pay any money, so he had to become a professional wrestler. And, you know, he was never really happy with that. So at one point, he quit WWE, tried out for the Minnesota Vikings, made the practice squad, which still is a pretty big achievement. But, like, when you're 20, you can't start the NFL at, like, 25. Like, it just doesn't work. It's impossible. So he ended up coming back to wrestling a bit and then going to UFC, where he actually, you know, had a decent run there. He was never the best fighter. He didn't have much of a chin, but he was big and strong and can out-wrestle anyone, so he was able to be champion for a little bit. And then after he lost the title, took a couple losses, he came back to WWE. And Vince, after seeing like just having this guy getting knocked out on UFC, was like, okay, we gotta make him 10 times more powerful than every wrestler we have on our roster, because that's how thirsty Vince is for like big guys. Like, even though like he got his clock cleaned several times, he still presented him as like the biggest, most badass person to ever live. Now, the thing about Brock is like he had fully like stopped kind of at that point, stopped giving a shit about like actually putting on good matches and being a good wrestler, from what I gather. And so his WrestleMania match, he's a champion, but the match actually went on first on the show and was about 90 seconds officially long, maybe 5 minutes with all the bullshit before. But like, he just like didn't give a shit. Like, they didn't put any effort forth for it, and it was really disappointing and bummed me out. And I actually left. I was at the WrestleSplania watch party with Kath and Rachel, and like, it just bummed me out so much I actually left the party and went home.
Wow.
Because it was
just a statement anyway.
Yeah, it was just so like, because the thing we always say about pro wrestling is that the beauty of it is, unlike a real sport, like the point is always to entertain the fans. So you're always going to get like a good back and forth game or something entertaining. And like, and the wrestlers take a lot of pride in putting on the best matches and entertaining the fans and getting those great reactions. And like, Brock just clearly does not give a shit. And like, it kind of felt very alienating to me, like very alien to me. Like,
weird.
This is not pro wrestling. This is just like checking the box. We have to have a title change on the show, go out, give them the belt, and that's
weird.
It. Yeah. But, after, I didn't watch the rest of it. It was the first WrestleMania that had women main event. If anybody knows anything about my wrestling fandom, I am much more, I much prefer like, women's wrestling, Japanese women's wrestling. But this, and you would think maybe, you know, women main eventing, including one I've met and covered over the years, that would be very exciting for me. Unfortunately, it wasn't, because at this point, like, WrestleMania is just like another show now. Because of the streaming service, you only pay $10 for it now to get like all the pay-per-views. And so like, having the WrestleMania main, you know, having that match be the main event doesn't mean nearly as much as it used to when you had to pay $65 to see it.
So you think that WWE needs to make more money?
Strangely enough, like when it, you know, when there was a little bit more gatekeeping on it, when someone like me, I can only watch WrestleMania by like turning it. You don't even remember this, Jack. You can turn it to like pay-per-view channels on the old cable boxes, and you can watch like the squiggly version.
I remember that. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah. Like that's how I used to watch WrestleMania. So of course, like in my mind's eye, it was always so much cooler and more than it actually was. But unfortunately, now you just like pay, and they're constantly handing out free trials. Like every time they hand out a free trial for every email address you give them. So it's like, it's nothing to get a WrestleMania now, sadly.
Wow. Wow. Sorry, ladies. It doesn't matter anymore. All right. Well, so that's it for WWE, I guess. I mean, you know, but go watch that one. Only watch that episode of John Oliver. Go watch that one single episode of John Oliver, and then, you know, skip the rest.
Here's something else that happened that I think you'll enjoy, Jack, as, you know, someone who has been a critic of showrunners.
Sure.
And of course, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, he's a showrunner.
King showrunner, yeah.
So one of the events WWE had this weekend was the Hall of Fame ceremony. Now, the WWE Hall of Fame is completely like fake and phony. They only let people in who are like who Vince is on good speaking terms with at the time and can show up. It's not a real legitimate professional wrestling Hall of Fame, unfortunately. Even though a lot of fans like it, and a lot of the wrestlers appreciate a chance to talk about their career. There are some, like, some really cool, really touching moments, but I just want to be clear that, this is not legitimate Hall of Fame, even though a lot of cool stuff happens at it. One terrible thing that happened, somebody tried to tackle Bret Hart on the show, like, which is really fucked up because he's a guy who had to retire because if he took another bad bump, he would have a stroke and die.
Jesus.
So, like, trying, and fans know this, so trying to tackle Bret Hart is, like,
so a fan tried to do that?
Yeah, it was like some random fan tried to tackle him. Was,
okay.
Of all the people,
kill him, everybody. Yeah. Don't kill him.
Don't kill Bret Hart, please. Goldberg already tried. So someone got fired during the show, during the Hall of Fame ceremony by Vince personally. Vince fired a writer because the wrestler whose speech he wrote mentioned Vince. Now, what?
So did the writer write Vince into it or what?
It's not clear yet. But the thing is, like, why wouldn't Vince want to be mentioned? And I was trying to figure this out because it doesn't make sense. Like, he's the owner of the company. Why doesn't he want to be mentioned? I thought maybe he had said something bad or negative about him. But
oh, really? He just mentioned him at all?
Yeah, he just mentioned him at all. And it's bizarre. Because Vince, this is Vince's sociopathic way of being humble. He doesn't want to be mentioned at the Hall of Fame ceremony, even as thank you, because he wants it to be about the wrestlers. So he thinks he's showing humility by firing his writer.
By firing a writer who probably did something at like the request of a wrestler, yeah, or just because they thought it was like a normal thing to do at a fake ceremony.
Yeah.
Like,
so
at
yeah,
a real ceremony, you'd say like thank you, and so this is like a fake pretend one. So I mean, aren't we supposed to pretend that this is a ceremony?
I don't know. He's a very strange, bizarre man. Who,
you know, the structure of our current, you know, modern day CEO structure, where everything is just down to the whims of whoever like it is happening to run the company at that moment. It just works really, really well. It just works really, really well. Whether it's wrestling or any type of job, it's good that, you know, companies are just hundreds of people that live at the whim of one person.
Yes. Or die, actually, at his whim.
Die,
too.
Correct, yeah.
With Vince McMahon, is more live and die.
Often, live and die,
often
yeah,
die, often die. People, yeah, dying at his whim.
Yeah.
All right. Jack, you had anything going on the past week?
Shit. God, I saw Shazam. I went and saw Shazam. I mean, that's like big. That's a big piece of news for me. I left the house and went and saw Shazam.
How was it?
I like Shazam, actually. I did like Shazam. You know, I think that these Warner, I think that the Warner DC movies like have a feel that's a little more blockbustery than the Marvels. I guess as I was watching the movie, I kind of realized that I'm going to call him Captain Marvel because that actually is his name, Captain Marvel.
Yes.
The character's named Captain Marvel. I like Captain Marvel. I guess I like the story of Captain Marvel and shit. Like, as I was watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, like, I like this, like, origin story. It's, like, cool to see it on screen. I'll tell you one thing, actually, too. Zachary Levi, who plays Captain Marvel when he's, like, in Captain Marvel mode, it's, like, not that, like, he's not. It's more about the kid, actually. I was worried when this movie was like announced that this was going to be like some kind of like annoying sort of like too comedy-ish like Deadpool kind of thing or something like that. I think it's a pretty charming little movie that has like a nice like it feels like a nice complete story that's like self-contained. It doesn't feel like we're, you know, even though it is part of the larger DC universe and they like mention Superman and stuff like that and Aquaman, it doesn't feel like we're just like watching an episode of a TV show that is that, you know, you don't get the whole story from. I don't know. I kind of felt like, it kind of feels like these Marvel movies, you like get punished if you miss any of them versus like DC is just kind of like, you know, it's another fun adventure. Come on along for another fun adventure if you so choose. I don't know. Like, we watched Aquaman the other week for that Mitch episode of Mitch Bowman. And then I watched this and I'm like, you know, I was worried about DC following like Suicide Squad and Justice League because I thought those were kind of stinkers. And I'm not like the hugest Wonder Woman fan either. But these last couple outings, I'm like, man, DC are just making like big, fun, kind of like ridiculous, super, not even ridiculous in the, like, these are like Fast and the Furious movies or something like that. They like, they take themselves seriously enough, but they're like big, fun action movies. You know what I mean? Like with like cool set pieces in them. I like the movie. I did.
Did The Rock show up?
He did not, but he's producer on the movie. Okay. So, you know, that will, I mean, he obviously is like locked down to play Black Adam or whatever. I don't want to spoil anything for you unless you don't care.
Oh, no, we can, I'll probably see it.
Okay. Yeah, don't do it. There's good shit in it. There is, I will say this, like you ask about if that character's in it. I'm like, there are others. There are other characters in it and that I think are kind of cool.
Tony Tiger. I'm surprised
that they went there.
Tony Tiger.
Not yet.
And not yet.
But there's reference. There's kind of like reference to Tony Tiger. The post, like the credit scene, I was like, damn, like they're doing it. Good God.
So, oh, there was another DC movie that people have talked about. I don't think we talked about it on the show yet. And that is Mr. Joker.
Yeah, okay. What do you think about Joker?
I am so stoked for this film. I am so excited for it because it looks like a movie. It looks like an actual movie, like the adult
Warner makes
watch.
Movies. Warner makes the DC movies are movies. I will say that.
And like it, and like people are trying to like parse this and compartmentalize it in the comic book scenario. Like, no, I'm pretty sure that
I don't give a shit about that stuff.
Yeah, the only thing this has to do with DC comics at all is that like. I guess Todd Phillips needed to call it Joker in order to get the money to make it. Like that feels like that's the only connection.
Yeah. For me, I'm like, that's my sort of thought on it as I'm like, wow, like, would it be nice? It'd be nice if they could release any movie that wasn't from like a children's cartoon in like, from like the 1930s at this point, that would be nice at some point if there could be any movie, even though I did like Shazam. So my thought on Joker is this, I'm like, not one of these people that's like, this is going to be the white men's anthem or whatever.
Oh, well, let's talk about those people. Like, so there was a couple of woke takes on the trailers. Like, wow, you're going to make us feel sympathetic for like a bad white man in 2019. Right. Really? Right. Seriously? Like, yeah, really seriously. It's an interesting movie. I mean, and it's like, it just looks like an interesting
movie.
Honestly,
I saw those takes and I'm just like, I'm so tired. I can't even like conceive of these. I'm like, who gives a fuck? Who gives a shit? It's fucking superhero movies. Yeah, no, who cares? Right.
Like there's a couple of things. First of all, Joker is going to kill less people in this movie than Captain America does in his movies. I can guarantee that. I can guarantee he will have a lower body count than Iron Man does. Okay. So if you're worried about standing for problematic white men, start with your boos over there.
I also think this, I'm like, you know, I think it's going to be less. It's just, here's why I'm like not that into it, actually, is I just don't love Todd Phillips that much as a director. Yeah. And so what reads for me when I look at this is I'm like, oh, this is like Todd Phillips trying to do like a cool kind of like Departed thing or something like that.
Yeah.
It like, it gives me red flags that like Scorsese was involved and left the project. You know that happened, right?
Oh, I didn't know he left.
Scorsese left the project like a year ago or something that. Although he was originally announced to be on it. So that's my big thing is like, I don't actually give a shit about, you know, if it's a white man destruction movie or whatever the fuck people seem to be upset about. I don't know. I don't know what that is. For me, I'm just like, I don't think Todd Phillips is that good. And I don't know. I don't know that it'll be good because of that.
Yeah, he tried to make he did a Huey Long movie, which was like trying to be like a movie. Yeah. Like he's been trying to do like a serious, I think War Dogs was probably, and
it's like in the serious realm,
like
or whatever,
a stab at that. I don't know. I think every bad director probably has one good movie in them. I'm hoping that this is his one good movie where everything just kind of comes together. And from the trailer,
I'll say his one good movie is Frat House in my mind. he did a documentary about frat houses, which is so funny. The Todd Phillips story is so funny because he's this like USC guy who made a really good documentary about frat houses called, I think it's called Frat House. Let me just try to actually make sure. I think it's called Frat House by Todd Phillips. And it's this like incisive, like fucked up look at like frat houses and like the culture inside frat houses. So what does Hollywood do with that? they make him into a bro comedian guy. Like, they're like, this guy made like a documentary that like exposes how completely fucked up and weird frat houses are. Let's give him a big budget comedy about how fun frat houses are. And then like just get him in that lane like forever.
Oh man. But one thing about the Discord that I did find like genuinely kind of disturbing is that, so when you watch the Joker trailer, which I suggest everybody do, I think it's really well done and the music is works phenomenally with it. It's like you see, you know, the Joker guy getting the shit kicked out of him multiple times. He's depressed. He's sad. He's living with his mom. He just does seems kind of hopeless. And then he kind of dons the makeup and kind of has a mental breakdown and becomes a Joker and everything like that. And what I kept seeing, people try to, woke attack this is saying, oh, look, we're celebrating mediocre white men now. We're celebrating mediocre white men now. I'm like, when did like downtrodden and sad and broken became mediocre?
Like Matt. It's like Matt, who was the guy on the Today Show before?
Matt Lauer.
Matt Lauer is like your mediocre white man.
Yeah, or
like,
Favreau.
John Favreau. Like, the people who have, like, massive amounts of success, despite the fact that they're, like, super bland because they're just kind of a charming white guy, that's what we're talking about when we talk about mediocre white men.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. It's about people who achieve all these things without really any real talent because of white privilege. It's not about, like, people who are downtrodden and getting the shit kicked out of them.
In fact, hearing about, and like, it's when you talk about people, like, that's what gives people, like, what makes people confused about the term white privilege, even.
Yeah,
because when you like think about downtrodden people, you're like, well, what about white privilege then, or whatever. Like, you know, of course there does still exist white privilege even in lower, you know, in lower classes and everything like that, but I was, you know, but I don't know. I do think that it's like, it's a silly thing to just make it about how he's a white guy.
Yeah, so mediocre used to refer to your level of talent and ability in spite of the success you have in our alleged meritocracy. Now it's being used by a bunch of successful white and some black people to mean like you are just not succeeding as much as they are, and that is what makes you mediocre.
That makes you mediocre. Not I who have what I have and deserve it because of meritocracy, of course. Those who don't have what I have are mediocre because they were never able to attain it.
Yeah. Disgusting.
Whatever. Fuck that shit. The movie, I mean, like, it's tough because I'm like, I do think the movie maybe looks whack. I'm not maybe like as hot on it as you are, but I don't think it looks whack for the reasons that that everyone thinks it looks whack. Yeah. I just like am wary about a Todd Phillips movie that's a little over. I'm like wary about Todd Phillips trying to do a Fight Club.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
King
like,
of comedy,
I like
yeah.
Fight Club. But Todd Phillips being like, this is going to be my Fight Club, sounds like a nightmare to me.
Yeah, yeah. I see. But I think most people were stoked about it. There was just like that Discord where like certain like big accounts and like some of these were like film reviewers too. I'm like,
yeah.
Like what? Like, oh, you're, have you seen like a movie before? Like,
I swear to God. I'm not one of these people that like wants to get too into like, you know, complaining about critics or clickbait or whatever, but I do think people fall into just like a familiar pattern and a repertoire, you know what I mean? And it's like how when the Lion King trailer comes out, I'm like, Disney sucks and fuck Disney or whatever. Like, there are a lot of like sort of woke reviewers out there who are like, okay, like what's the take I've run before on this kind of thing? Like, let's run one of these again, you know what I mean? Like, I do in my heart believe fuck Disney, but I'm also like, I know that I'm kind of running one of the things in my personal, you know, repertoire or whatever.
Hey, I had no problem saying Infinity War was okay. I'll judge it each on its own merits.
Yeah. And I do have a problem with that. I would never say that. Infinity War is not okay by any stretch.
But someone, some people did ask me, so where we put, you know, Joaquin's Joker in the Joker of War, where does he rank? And I say, you know, you shouldn't be asking that question. That is, you know, something like we here in Struggle Session, we believe that all Jokers are valid and all
Jokers matter
and all Jokers are beautiful. Okay.
Yeah.
His Joker is beautiful. Jared's Joker is beautiful. Caesar's, you know, Mark Hamill's, like everyone's Joker is beautiful because it's a great character, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it is a great character. I am just like, it's enough already. That's part of how I feel. Is I'm like, it's enough. This character, when was the Joker made? Like, I am, I'm sorry, Leslie, I'm going on the opposite end of you here.
Oh, come on.
But I'm like, the Joker was made in like 1945 or something like that. Like, is there nothing, like, can we get a new scary clown guy at some point?
Well, here's the thing. We have.
Like the guy from Spawn. The guy from Spawn is one of
them. Oh, Violator.
New scary clown.
Violator. He's all right. John Leguizamo played the hell out of that part. But the thing is, like, so the Joker has been, like, updated, like, over time. Like,
right.
Before he was just, like, a scary clown. Then he was, like, I don't know which order was it, but, like, there's three, like, metrics. Of the Joker, there's like gangster Joker, sexual sadist serial killer Joker, and like goofy clown Joker. And each Joker is like on a spectrum between these three, on these three variables, right?
Right.
Like, and I think, you know, you keep messing with the formula, you get a bunch of interesting stuff there.
Like, I agree with that. I do agree with that. It is, there's just a part of me though that's like, I still can't like help but witness that I'm like, man. It's all these companies that are just wielding like copyright law.
Yeah.
And like we're forced to live with these characters and these characters only forever because these companies own them.
And that's why I do kind of find like this film interesting because it's clearly like not trying to have any connection to a larger world. Like people are trying to figure out where's, you know, Batman in this.
You see Arkham Asylum is in
no,
it.
You see Arkham Hospital, which not which okay, isn't even right. A fucking thing, right? like it's just trying. It's just like they wrote this script. They came up with this idea for this movie, and they decided to paste Joker on it. Like he has his name is like Arthur. Like
I will say, it's like this is the kind of shit you want to see. I mean, like I would like to see more of if we're going to just like keep reinterpreting these sort of corporate owned characters and everything like that. Like this is obviously so much better. Like I would rather. This is what I would have rather seen out of Star Wars. To be honest with you, it's just a bunch of different directors doing like. Completely batshit, like weird Star Wars things. Like, I would have loved to see, like, David Lynch's Star Wars. You know, I appreciate at least that Warner's not being, like, 100% safe and just, you know, again. A lot of this is just motivated by how much I like hate Disney, who makes 40% of the movies now and like all of their output entirely. So a lot of it is just me being like, well, at least it's not Disney.
All right. So what else we got to talk about? There has been some more bad discourse about a game we talked about on the show. We gave our first impression on it. It's time to give our this is our second impression of Sekiro.
We'll be doing many of them, but this is number two.
To be clear, this is not set in stone. We can
not doing a review
update this at any point in time in the future. Just want to be really clear.
I'm not doing
that.
A review.
Not a review. This is a second.
This is a living document, like the Constitution.
Second impressions. All right.
Yeah.
Let's start first about where we're at in the game. I feel like I'm pretty far in. If I'm not at, I've gotten all the stuff that you have to get to unlock the second harder half of the game, which you always do in these From games. I don't want to give out the spoilers, but I've gotten like the beads. And like the frog and the this is not what they actually are and like the diamond and I've gathered all those materials.
You got all the little shit.
All the stuff from around the world and I've just gathered those and now I have to fight someone because I told him to fuck off and that's where I'm at. And I feel like I'm pretty far in the game and I love it more. I actually like it more now because because we were talked about on the last show, like it was very difficult for me to adjust from playing Dark Souls to this. Mm-hmm. Now I kind of get this. I kind of get the rhythm. I kind of get how you're supposed to approach, not just the mobs, but the bosses. It's much more about like dying of, you shouldn't try to beat a boss like the first time you play it. You should like kind of sit back and watch and try to memorize their patterns. And because once you get that down, like you can beat them without taking any damage if you execute properly. You just know their patterns, know what they're vulnerable against, know what items you should be using. I wasn't using items, ridiculously for like the first like 70% of the game because I was always hoarding them like you do in Souls games. Usually you hoard all the items in case you might use it need them at the end, but now I've been kind of using them more willy-nilly and it's helped my gameplay a lot.
So My second impression, I'm nowhere near as far as Leslie is in the game. So I don't know what happened in the game, but somehow I got to the residence or whatever. What is it called? It's like the Haroni residence or something. The second level. Somehow the second level was like available for me, I realize now, before I finished the first level. So I was like kind of trying to grind my way through this second level, the like estate or whatever. And I did finally get through. I finally got through and I killed the I killed the like shinobi hunter there. Oh, yeah. I was able to do that after some difficulty and all that. After beating the shinobi hunter, I got to like the ogre or something, the next boss, and then I realized that I never beat the first level. I like went back to the first level because I was like going back to try to get like the seeds or something like that, and I was like, oh, like I never like got through this entire area or whatever. So now I've gone back to the first level. And I just beat I beat a couple bosses there. I beat like a shinobi hunter general. I beat a general there. And then I went and beat the like chained giant. Okay. I was able to like get past the chained giant. And that is the long and short of it, folks. That's as far as I've gotten at this point. I'm working my way at it. I actually do find it really, really satisfying. It's really, really hard. It's like not, you know, necessarily something that I can like settle into and just relax with. But I agree with you, Leslie, that, you know, there is like, there's a real satisfaction in like learning the patterns of these enemies and like coming up with a strategy for it and, you know, not getting any kind of helping hand with it. Like, I am very, very slowly making my way through this game. And I'll be honest with you, Leslie, I am in some ways very much ashamed. Very much ashamed of my progress here. And I'll tell you why. There's one very specific reason. Okay.
I think I know
what
it is.
Last week, I think you maybe do. Over this last week, one of the Pod Save America guys started doing some streaming on Twitch. John Lovett's been streaming some Sekiro on Twitch. And I've been joining his Twitch chat just to ask. I mean, I am now banned, but I was asking him if he thought it was a good idea to recommend to Elizabeth Warren that she take a DNA test, which he did do on the Pods of America podcast. He said that he was going to put the issue to rest, even if it was giving in to Trump's bullying just for once, it would put the issue to rest if she took a DNA test. So I was just asking him in the chat, you know, if he thinks it's a good idea that she took the DNA test that he recommended. He ended up banning me and saying that he didn't want to talk politics on the stream and that I wasn't being honest or whatever the fuck. But he's farther than I am. John Lovett, I cannot deny, is further than I am in Sekiro. It made me feel like I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I number one, have not been devoting the time. It made me feel like, what is John Lovett doing?
Yeah, I know, right?
He's further in Sekiro. Like, is he like far in it? Like, he's like too far in Sekiro for a guy that like runs a media company. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, but it did make me feel like a lot of shame. It really did. And every time I'm playing Sekiro, there's like an additional level of humiliation and like toughness to it that I'm like, John Lovett has gotten through this. John Lovett has gotten past this part that I can't fucking do. The least member of Pod Save America.
Oh no, that
the
other
lowest
guy.
Lowest of the low.
That other guy is way worse. Not
Pfeiffer?
Yeah, he's way worse. Come on.
All right.
Come on.
I mean, as far as like knowing anything and being like, Dan Pfeiffer was smart enough to grift everybody for healthcare payments. He saw the flaw in the ACA and was like, I can make a lot of money off this. So I mean, that's like being thoughtful anyway. It's, you know, sharp guy. I don't know. So, I mean, look, I actually really am enjoying Sekiro, but I can also cop that, you know, it is difficult. I think I'm going to keep playing it, but just at my very slow clip of like just very slowly grinding through it. I think it got me so frustrated on Monday that I spent the rest of the week solely reading books. Like, I like got so stressed out from Sekiro that I like read the entire second book of the Thrawn trilogy.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Which, by the way, is great, and I'm, you know, I can't wait for number three to come.
Cool. All right. So, yeah, I can definitely see that. There was a point I got to where I was very frustrated with Sekiro, but I was finally able to just, like, play one. Like, I was at three mini-bosses at the same time, and I couldn't beat any of them. Yeah. But I was finally able to like play well enough to take out one, and then I took out the other, and then I took out the other, and I was like high. I was like on gamer's high, like going through, for like a couple of hours in gameplay. I was just smashing everything. And then I met like a giant ape that just destroyed me for a little bit.
Is that the one that John Lovett is getting destroyed by?
Yeah, the same one.
Good Lord. So are you in the same spot as John Lovett?
Well, I beat it.
Okay.
I got past it.
But I will say that there are moments like Sekiro's frustrates me like to shit. Like I have rage quit the game, but then also like accomplishing things in Sekiro, I have not in any other game in a long time like stood up from my chair and like arms in the air.
Yeah, like, and that's kind of what the game is about. It's like you meet these challenges and it's like, so you didn't get like faster, right? You didn't do exercises with your fingers to get them faster to beat these, to get these accomplishments. You just got better at executing, smarter about playing, and played smartly long enough to beat these battles. And that's the From challenge, the From Software guarantee. That's how it works. That's how all these games work. They're never really that hard. It's just about like knowing what to do from trial and error, or looking up online the best strategies and executing it.
Which I do that too.
Executing it instead of going with the typical run forward and hit the attack button, like that you can do in every.
You have to develop like a fight strategy. Like you have to like time blocks and stuff like that. It feels like I'm actually defeating a giant.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, hitting the X button when the circle gets closest to being around the X button.
Yeah, it's like you have to decide, well, am I going to block or am I going to deflect? Or am I going to focus on running behind them and hitting them? You have to figure out when they're vulnerable, what their main attacks are. And it's just, it's really more about how you think yourself through these fights, because there is fights where, difficult fights where I watched a video and because I knew what to do, I can execute it like perfectly. I can beat them like on the first go. Right. And there's, but there's other fights that took me forever to do just because I wasn't, you know, properly strategizing. Even if I was, you know, I'm still the same gamer, but just, you know, it's different. The games are different, and the discourse around it has been awful, absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of discourse around whether it should have an easy mode or something like that. We demand an easy mode from From Software. We demand that From Software go in and like do like additional programming and design, I guess, and like just I don't understand. Like I actually don't understand what the demand is here.
Well, so the demand is that this game be less frustrating for game journalists because they see all these other people playing it and having a good time and they're mad about it because they couldn't finish it in time for the deadline for their review. That may be unfair, but I think it's fair for some people. But yeah, so this only, and it's so funny that this only comes up because there's so many games that are so much harder than From Software games and Sekiro. Like playing through 100 hours of Assassin's Creed is much harder to finish than finishing Dark Souls, I would say. And you can look at stats to see actually, if you actually look at the statistics for like who finishes game and how often people finish games, From Software games have a fairly high finish rate compared to a lot of other games, these interminable open world games that people like play, start, get like the first couple of trophies and then they quit because they're completely overwhelmed with the scope and the scale and they don't know what to do. And people tried to bring in like accessibility issues and disability issues into this, which is like, no, easy mode is not of necessarily accessibility issues.
I did see that set. I saw that set and I was like, I just don't like get it. I really don't. Well, I do think like the accessibility issues, I just don't know anything about it, to be honest.
I do because as I've said on the show, like I can't play with a mouse and keyboard. I have a repetitive stress injury. So like accessibility is something I think about a lot. I thought about it today. There was a game I've been waiting for probably a year, been following it, and it came out today and I can't buy it because I can't play it because it doesn't have controller input built in.
Support,
it doesn't have controller support. So I can.
Which, by the way, you were posting about this, by the way. It's on like Xbox or something, right?
There's a few. Not yet. This particular game I'm talking about is not on Xbox. Okay. It's going to come to Switch because it's an indie game and every indie game comes to Switch. I'm crossing my fingers that when they put it on Switch with controller support, they actually add it back to the PC version. But that has not happened before. There's tons of games that like do not have, that are on consoles, but don't have controller support on PC. I wanted to bring up one of them, one of the producers for XCOM, this guy named Jake Solomon. He jumped into the Sekiro discourse with this tweet and it infuriated me. I'll tell you why. In regards to easy modes, over 80% of XCOM players choose our easy and normal modes. 80%. Play the game the way that's fun for you. Period. All right, motherfucker. I wanted to play XCOM 2 with a fucking controller on my PC. I assumed it would be possible because XCOM 1 had controller support and XCOM, and it was on Xbox, PS4, set fucking cell phones. I assumed XCOM 2 would have the same thing, but on launch it did not. And so what this means, and when it was implemented, it was a very janky implementation. So what that means is that, you know, all the mods that they have, all those cool mods for XCOM 2 that you hear about, the Long War, all that shit, none of those work for a controller. Your game will hard crash to desktop if you even have a controller plugged in while trying to use those mods. So fuck you, Jake. Your game is not accessible. Just because you have a easy mode does not make your game accessible to people who cannot play. Accessibility, I would say, primarily that I've seen, is about allowing people to have different methods of input, okay, having certain options like that just makes
color options,
yeah, color
like
options
for people that are like colorblind,
yeah, colorblind options, things that let people play the same games but just allow them to play them. It's not the same thing as having an easy mode. It's a different thing. And to have a bunch of able-bodied, you know, gaming journalists conflate these issues for like a really disingenuous reason pisses me off, because there's 100 articles about how Dark Souls needs a fucking easy mode. Zero fucking articles about how all these PC games on need controller support. Like the most simple thing. And it's games you wouldn't believe, like Mass Effect, the entire Mass Effect trilogy. Not a single one of them has controller support. Those games were
Is that true?
Yes.
Wow.
Those games were like primarily console games.
That's really like wild. I also think that there, if we are talking about games as an art form, and if we do talk about, like, we want to, like, recognize video games as an art form, then I think we have to have some respect for, like, what the intention, what the, like, authorial intent is, even though it's not, you know, auteur theory or whatever, but, like, there is authorial intent, and the intent of this game is for it to be difficult, and for you to feel like a sense of accomplishment when you accomplish
things. Yeah, so it's not even that, right? Because these games aren't really that hard compared to a lot of other games or hard modes. It's just that the way you play them is very different than other games that look like it. So, for example, like the XCOM 2, he says, we have easy mode. Okay, but still, on easy mode, if one of your guys, most people play on normal mode, easy mode. If one of your guys dies in XCOM, they're gone forever. If all your squad gets wiped, you may have to restart the entire game and start over from the beginning, because there are hard fail states in the game, and that's built in, and that's what XCOM is about. In Sekiro, if you die, you just start at the like save point after losing a few coins. It's just a different.
And here's the thing: if you said that, like, you know, there should be a mode where XCOM like doesn't have these hard fail points, it's like, well, you are dictating to, like, the developer then, like, what you are saying that their game should be. Like, that's what they designed the game to be, was, like, that you could have hard fail
states. And I'm not necessarily against the easy mode, but I think none of the people talking about it understand From Software Games or take them seriously, because it's, like, you just fail in different ways than other games. Like, in Assassin's Creed, in, like, a Metal Gear Solid, right? It's failure in Metal Gear Solid 5, I would say, it feels like a failure when you get seen, but you have like tons of options of getting out of it.
Right.
But in Metal Gear Solid,
I choose to restart.
Yeah, but in Metal Gear Solid 1, you would just like have to restart. I would choose to restart as well, even though I don't really think Metal Gear Solid 5 is easier than Metal Gear Solid 1. In some ways, it's a lot harder and more complex. It's just like it moves the failures. It's just different.
Different type of game.
Yeah, it's a different game. So in Dark Souls, like you get hit a few times and you die, but you start over like pretty close to where you were at, and you learn better, and you et cetera, et cetera. In other games, it's just like everything becomes a clusterfuck and you have to run, heal up, and then you come back. You know, it's just a different style of game play. And like, you really, if you want to talk about what an easy mode would mean, you should actually talk about the game itself, what these From Software games are, how they operate. You can't just say, Assassin's Creed has an easy mode, so this should have an easy mode, exactly like Assassin's Creed. Like,
and if you disagree, then you stand against gamers with accessibility.
Yeah,
you
that's
son of a bitch.
That's fucked up.
You bastard.
All right.
Look, I ultimately think I'm like, you are like, I don't know how the game would work with an easy mode. To be honest, I don't like that's like you would have to like go back to like the development like design stage to like rethink the entire thing. And like I think you're right. And like I'll expand it not only to just game journalists, but it's just people that want to be part of like a cultural moment because everything is like tweeted about or whatever. And when they're trying to do it, they're like, this is too hard for me. Like, fuck that. Like. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Like, some things are not for you. You know?
Like, Fortnite is not for me because I can't.
Not everything needs to be for you. Yeah.
Because I can't play any online shooters, because I'll get, wiped out if I use a controller on PC. That's just how it is, folks. And sometimes I have to play a different game. It does, suck, but there's a lot of games like real time strategy games. Try playing those with an emulated fucking controller. Like that.
I believe that they should release a good version of all the Marvel movies. They should release them with good mode where the movies are good and not bad.
That's a good name for this. Good mode. Good mode.
Good mode.
All right, folks. That's been Struggle Session. Have a good one.
All right. Goodbye.